got about a trace of snow here, but in your neck of the woods, you should have more, over.
Yeah, I was just looking out in the front yard. I think I got about 6 inches, and it's still coming down.
Yeah, my brother's in Rockland County, New York, and he's supposed to get about a foot. And I thought I heard Marty say that he's looking at towards a foot or 15 inches. I told him after 7 inches, I have to get a ruler. I can't measure it anymore.
Yeah, Roger. Well, I looked at the forecast map, and they're calling for, we're in the 6 to 12 inch zone, so who knows what the hell it'll be. I guess New York City's really supposed to get hammered.
Yeah, the city, and as I said, my brother's in Rockland County, so he's only 25 miles from the city. And then around D.C., they're supposed to get a foot of snow, too. In Alexandria, Virginia area, over.
Yeah, Roger. Well, I don't know. We haven't had much snow for quite a while. I don't think we had more than a few inches at any one time last winter, so it's been a while since we've had any sizable amount of snow.
I've not plowed my driveway with the front end loader for 3 years, but I had to, a couple weeks ago when we got that 13 inches, I had to crack it out. But, yeah, we've had mild winters. We'd had an inch or two, but that'd be it. But this might begin to be a good winter, if you want to call it a good winter. My wife likes it because when it snows and it's cold, it kills the ticks. So the deer ticks are terrible in Ohio. But when I was looking at a map, they're really bad in Pennsylvania, over.
Yeah, Roger. Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah, I've had my snow blower for, I don't know, quite a while. Well, I don't know, maybe 10 years. I've probably only used it 4 years. I don't know. I just thought, I'm going to get this thing running. I mean, it's brand new, basically. And but that fuel sits in the carburetor. So I replaced the carburetor and put a fuel shut off so that at the end of the season, I can shut the fuel off and just run the carburetor empty. And then that way, you don't have fuel in the carburetor until the next year or the year after that, and then that damn alcohol gasoline that we got now just tears up these little carburetors. I put that fuel shut off on it to eliminate that problem. I got the thing ready to go. I test ran it back in October, and I got it. I got gas, and I got the thing aimed. So all I have to do is open up the garage door and drive it out, and I'll be throwing snow, over.
Yep, that's a good thing. There's two theories of thought. One of them is if you run the carburetor out of fuel, the gaskets then start to dry out from not having wet fuel on them. The other theory, of course, is our alcohol-based fuel is very hard on them. So your last tank of fuel, if you'd fill it up and put stable in it, run the stable so you know it's in the carburetor, let fuel in the carburetor, but shut the fuel line off so there's no pressure against the needle and seat. So there's two cool schools of thought on how to approach that. I'm assuming, and you know what happens when you assume, you're the controller tonight, over.
Come back again.
I'm assuming that you're net control tonight.
Well, Jesse called me earlier today and said he was still having trouble, and I said, well, if you want me to be net control, let me know. And he says, well, I'm going to call Bob and see if he wants to do it. And if he doesn't want to, then I'll call you back. But he never called me, so I assumed you were up for it.
I never heard from him, but I'll put it in your hands. I don't mind either way.
Well, no, I mean, if you don't mind, because you guys are better at it than me. You got the gift of gab. I'm always complaining and theorizing, and you guys, you know, got the gift of gab. So I think you guys do a better job than I do.
Well, you did a fine job last week, so don't put yourself down. But if you don't want it, I will be happy. I'm already up on NetLogger. I already heard from Mr. Moe out there in Nebraska. I heard from you, so I'll pick it up if it's that's what you want.
Yeah, go ahead and take it, Bob.
All righty. Well, it's 2202. It is. What am I looking at? I think it's December 16th. Yes, December 16th. So good evening to all the participants on this 75-meter Liberty Net tonight. This is a directed net, and I believe it is the longest running and only current events discussion net on amateur radio now and since the year of 1974, founded by Mr. Victor, W1WCR. This is the Arium net, not the Pyrite net. Current events and amateur radio topics are welcome tonight on the Real and the Great Liberty net. I'm going to look for check-ins, so CQ, CQ. Those who'd like to participate, come now. CQ, CQ, looking for check-ins for the Wednesday Night Liberty Net. Over. I have not heard anything, so I'll open with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. With that being said, let me look for a couple more check-ins, and then I'll start off and we'll pick it up as we go along. So CQ, CQ, looking for check-ins for the Wednesday night. I think I said Saturday. Anyhow, the Wednesday Night Liberty Net, over. Nothing heard, so I am going to just start out with a real quick one, and then I will look again. Good old Fauci. His birthday is New Year's Eve, and he is complaining about he wants the people, this is from Fox News, he wants the public to not have family over for Christmas, and it's painful. We don't like that, but we have to accept it going through this unprecedented, challenging time. Fauci noting that many Americans ignored health guidelines over Thanksgiving, warned that Christmas cannot be business as usual. Fauci urged resilience, qualifying that the pandemic is, quote, an unusual situation, unquote, and is, quote, not going to last forever. Well, if you let the Democrats in, they're going to make this goddamn thing last forever, because that's what they want. The number of people who have died from the coronavirus in the U.S. passed a staggering 300,000 on Monday, according to Johns Hopkins University, with about 2,400 people dying per day on the average. Now, with that being said, the good old CDC, which I don't really give a whole lot of faith in them, but the liberals do. So I went to the CDC website. In 2020, from January to April, 944,251 Americans have died from everything, heart, from crashes, from COVID, from whatever, 944,000. Let's go back to 2018. That would be pre-corona, the same time, January through April, 946,067 Americans died. That's 2,000 more people died in 2018, January to April, compared to 2020, January to April. So, just really how bad is corona? People don't die of anything else in America. They don't die of heart attacks. They don't die at My dang phone's ringing. And it's Mr. Marty. I gotta wait a minute. They don't die of anything else but COVID-19, which is bull. So, with that being said, let me see if I can hear Mr. Mo. KD0RSA, KAAJOY.
KAAJOY, KD0RSA, am I making it over?
Yeah, I can hear you, Mo. Bob must be on the phone. Take it away.
Well, I just heard him talking. Anyway, KD0RSA, as far as I'm concerned, this country's in a mess with the Democrats are doing what they're doing, and it's got to get straightened out. This time around, if it don't get straightened out, why, then there has to be something more drastic straighten it out. KD0RSA, I'll turn it back to JOY. Over.
Did you hear him, Bob?
Negative. I know he's talking, but I can't hear him. Over.
Yeah, he turned it back, Katie. He just made a short transmission.
All righty. I'm sorry, Bo. The conditions are crappy here in eastern Ohio or eastern U.S., but I heard you when you checked in. So let me hand it over to Mr. William, KO4FE, KAJOY.
Okay, KAAJOY, Liberty Net, from KO4FE. Okay, Bob, yeah, band's not in very good shape. As a matter of fact, you're like five over. It's easily copyable, but I can still hear the noise in the background. But it's all right. Well, here's a story. Serial killer healthcare worker formally charged with 17 murders. Listen to this story. A suspected Texas serial killer has been indicted on three additional counts of capital murder after previously being charged with smothering 14 elderly women to death and stealing their valuables. A Dallas County grand jury on Tuesday indicted healthcare worker Billy Chemermere, 48, on murder charges in the death of Joyce Abramowitz, 82, Doris Wasserman, 90, and Margaret White, 86, who were all killed at the traditional Prestonwood senior living community in Dallas between July 2016 and December 2017. Now listen to this. Chemamere, a Kenyan national living in the U.S. illegally, now faces a total of 17 capital murder charges and two counts of attempted capital murder stemming from similar attacks. So the guy was an illegal alien. How the hell did he get a job in a nursing home? Don't they do background checks? You'd think they'd be checking people working in a nursing home. Well, evidently they didn't. I think they ought to sue the nursing home. But anyway, the medical examiner reports and all civil lawsuits have also linked Chemermere to seven other deaths in North Texas, but so far he has not been formally charged in those, so it may be up over 20. Many of the deaths now attributed to Chemermere were first listed as deaths by natural causes as no foul play was suspected. However, once he was identified as a suspect in March 2018, detectives began reviewing hundreds of natural death cases to attempt to identify other potential victims. He is still being investigated for nearly 1,000 unsolved deaths and attacks, mostly targeting elderly women in nursing homes. Chemermere remains in jail on $11.6 million for bail. He has maintained his innocence. If convicted of capital murder, Chemermere could face the death penalty. Well, he ought to get the death penalty. the trio of deaths that sparked the latest round of indictments against Chem Ramirez first came to light in civil complaints that had been filed against the retirement community where the victims lived. Joyce Abramowitz died in July 2016, 3 months after she went to police to report that someone had stolen jewelry from her while she was on vacation. After her death, the woman's son reported that a safe was missing from her room. And the nursing home didn't investigate. Just a month later, Margaret White was found dead at the traditional Prestonwood complex where her apartment was found to have been stripped of her jewelry. A day before Christmas in 2017, Doris Wasserman was found dead in her bed just hours after spending time with her family. Officials in Dallas County are also investigating Chem Ramirez's possible involvement in the death of Catherine Probst Sinclair at the Edgemere Senior Living Facility in North Dallas in April of 2016. Her niece told the paper the family also believed her aunt had been killed, but said police did not take their suspicions seriously. The niece said there was blood on Sinclair's pillow and a safe was missing from her apartment. I don't understand this. They got these deaths of these elderly women and you got jewelry and safes missing from their rooms, and the cops, the nursing home, they don't think anything's going on. Chemermere has been in custody since March 2018 for the killing of 81-year-old Lou Di Harris. Police in Plano were investigating Chemermere in connection with a suspicious death and suspicious person calls at a senior apartment complex in that Dallas suburb, and found evidence linking him to Harris's death in Dallas, authorities said. So anyway, let me read this. The break in the case came when Chem Ramirez forced his way into the Plano apartment of a 91-year-old woman that March, telling her to go to bed, don't fight me, according to an arrest affidavit filed in Collin County. The woman was smothered with a pillow into unconsciousness and robbed. However, paramedics revived her, and she told investigators that her attacker had stolen a box containing her jewelry. Police identified Chemermere from a license plate number and were also able to find and tail him days later when they watched him throw a jewelry box into a trash bin. They traced the box to Harris, according to the affidavit. So anyway, nobody was listening to these people complaining, and if this woman wouldn't have been brought back to life after being smothered by this animal, they still wouldn't have believed it. So anyway, there you go. This guy may have killed possibly 1,000 women. They know that he's gotten over 20, an illegal alien. Okay, here's another story. Former CIA officer and counterintelligence expert uncovers Obama crime database, hides BLM and Antifa violence, but inflates white right-wing violence. This is off Gateway Pundit. Former CIA counterintelligence officer Brad Johnson performed a study on a criminal database that found overstates white right-wing violence while discounting BLM and Antifa violence. In Johnson's study of the TIFAS database, there were a couple of notable findings. Terrorism and extremist violence in the United States is a U.S. government-funded database that tabulates violent attacks in the United States. Used by the U.S. government and media alike, it is one of the fundamental sources of information about who's conducting violent attacks in the United States. Tevis reporting appears to set out to cover up Islamic, Arab, black nationalist, and left-wing terrorism and extremist violence while attempting to document white and right-wing violence where there is no violence that actually exists. But apparently, to no one's surprise, is that Tevis is highly political. Americans for Intelligence Reform partially funded an exhaustive two-year study by Air Senior Fellow Christopher Hull, PhD, to look at the details and accuracy of what Tevis reports that is used by DHS, the rest of our federal government, and the media. It appears that Tevis is a deeply political product with little information based on accurate analysis. The results of the study would be shocking if Obama wasn't involved, but we have become numb to the radical and dishonest actions related to the Obama administration. Tevis uses their reporting and simply excludes many violent acts if they were perpetrated by non-whites, or worse, outright lies about the races of the individuals conducting the violent acts. In a blatant display of data manipulation, the exclusively Arab 9/11 hijackers who murdered nearly 3,000 innocent people were categorized by Tevis as, quote, white, Caucasian, non-Hispanic, unquote. And as a result, Tevis is able to attribute all those killed in 9/11 to whites. Tevis systematically covers up the violence associated with black nationalist groups such as Black Lives Matter, even though BLM activists and supporters have allegedly killed at least 11 police officers and wounded 9 since 2014. None of that information is included. So there you go. The government's lying. The agencies that they use for such information is biased. The media just parrots it. That's why we keep hearing, it's right-wing violence. It's white supremacists. Well, they're reading this fake information from this damn Tevis database, which is phony. I mean, you'd think the government would verify this stuff. Okay, Bob, here's the topper. Listen to this one. Again, Gateway Pundit. Pennsylvania Health Department issues preferred COVID orgy regulations. Wear a face covering, avoid kissing, and wash hands often. Can you imagine this? And look at this freak that's running the Pennsylvania Department of Health. It's that transsexual weirdo. It says the Pennsylvania Department of Health, led by Dr. Rachel Levine, issued new rules for large gatherings where you might end up having sex. These large gatherings where you might end up having sex are also commonly referred to as orgies. And this is their guideline. It says large gatherings are not safe during COVID-19, but if you attend a large gathering where you might end up having sex, below are tips to reduce your risk of spreading or getting COVID-19 through sex. It says limit the number of partners. Try to identify a consistent sex partner. Wear a face covering, avoid kissing, and do not touch your eyes, nose, or mouth with unwashed hands. Wash your hands with soap and water often, and especially before and after sex. If soap and water are not available, use an alcohol-based sanitizer. Oh, God. You know, it's hard to believe that a government agency would put out something like that, but when you got Democrats, especially a health department run by some character like this Dr. Rachel Levine, this is the kind of crazy stuff you end up with. So anyway, Bob, send it back to you. KAHJOY Liberty Net from KO4FE.
Amazing that they would tell you how to have an orgy. hey, the best thing is do it doggy style. That way you're not face-to-face, right?
Yeah, Roger. Well, I'm surprised they didn't put that in there.
That'll be in the next one. So good one. Good one, Bill. Those are good ones. KO4FE, KHOI. Let me see if I have anybody else standing by. This is the Wednesday Night Liberty Net, looking for check-in. CQ, CQ.
ROQ, checking in.
Mr. Larry, it's good to hear you. How's it doing in Tennessee snow-wise?
Oh, just rain. Just rain. We haven't got any snow yet. And could you please ask Bill to go over those orgy regulations again? I missed some of that.
Well, before I hand it to you, Mr. Bill, would you read that one again about the orgy? Larry's really interested in that one.
Yeah, okay. Let me get it back up in the browser. Give me a minute.
Just kidding.
Hey, Larry, let me throw one out to you that you missed that I gave, and then Bill should be ready. So from the CDC in 2020, January to April, 944 and 251,000 Americans died of something. COVID, pneumonia. Of course, nobody dies of anything but COVID. But 944,000 in 2020, in that four-month period. 2018, before COVID, 946,000 Americans died of something. That's 2,000 more people in 18 than in 2020. So I guess COVID-19's not that deadly, right? Where'd you go, Mr. Larry? N4ROQ, KHOI.
I'm ready to go.
All righty, Mr. Bill's going to read that article back to you here, and then it'll be your turn.
No, that's okay. That's okay there. Bill knows I'm just kidding.
Oh, I thought you were getting, you wanted the safety precautions for an orgy you had planned.
Yeah, well, I don't wait for those liberal Democrat regulations anyway.
Yeah, Roger.
So that must mean that Larry's going to have a Republican orgy, so he will practice safe sex and mask up. Alrighty, well, I thought you were serious too, Larry. So I'll hand it to you. Are you all ready to go? N4ROQ, KHOI.
I'm ready to go.
Take it away, sir.
Okay. There's an article here on Jerusalem with an eye on Iran. Israel tests integrated missile defense system. Well, all these countries are getting their defensive system ready, their missile defense system. Israel's defense ministry said Tuesday it conducted a series of successful live fire drills with its multi-range missile defense system, providing protection against threats posed by Iran and its proxies. Defense officials said it was the first time they have conducted an integrated test, bringing together the components of the country's missile defense, the Arrow. That's A-R-R-O-W, which intercepts long-range missiles, David Sling, meant to thwart medium-range missiles, and the Iron Dome, which defends against nearby rocket fire. So they got three systems, long-range, medium-range, and nearby rocket fire. So they're ready to rock and roll, looks like, in Israel. But they know they're going to be under the gun there. They knocked out their nuclear scientist here the other day that is over the whole nuclear program. And of course they said, who, me? I didn't have anything to do with it. So we'll see what happens. I hope everything turns out good for Israel. They're just trying to survive over there in that wilderness of Muslims.
All right.
here's the one on I guess everyone wants to know about the butterfly. I love butterflies. Threatening butterfly put on the wait list. The federal government has decided against listing the monarch butterfly as either threatened or endangered, at least for now. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will consider the black and orange butterfly, along with a common sight and backyard gardens, meadows, and other landscapes, as a candidate for designation as either threatened or endangered in future years. We conducted an intensive review using a rigorous, transparent, science-based process and found that the monarch meets listed criteria under the Endangered Species Act. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Director Aurelia Skipwith said in a statement, however, before we can propose listing, we must focus resources on our higher priority listing actions. There are 161 higher priority species across the nation that are ahead of the monarch, the service said. Protection under the Endangered Species Act would have required the U.S. to develop and fund a comprehensive nationwide recovery plan, according to National Geographic. So, they've got to put it on the endangered species list, then they're going to have to fund a comprehensive nationwide recovery plan. All right, let's see. Moving from there. Indonesia raid nets top terrorist suspect. This is from Indonesia, Jakarta. Indonesia police arrested a man believed to be the military leader of Al-Qaeda, linked Jamal Islamiyah. Well, I hate to pronounce things for a living. Network, who had eluded capture since 2003, authorities said Saturday. Ernest Semarino, known as Zakarian, was arrested late Thursday by counterterrorism police without resistance in a raid at a house in East Lampung District on Sumatra Island, said National Police spokesperson Ahmad Ramahan. Ramadan is suspected of being involved in the making of bombs used in a series of attacks, including the 2002 Bali bombings that killed 202 people and a 2003 attack on the JW Marriott Hotel in Jakarta, Indonesia's capital, that killed 12. Ramadan said, Zulkarin, a biologist who was among the first Indonesia militants to go to Afghanistan for training, is also accused of harboring Upik Lugua, another bomb maker and a key Jimmy Aswanihan member. Anyway, I thought this might be more interesting, but it says they're supposed to have the top terrorist suspect out of Indonesia now. We'll see if they can keep him for a while. Spacecraft grounded by faulty engine. This comes from the Associated Press, Albuquerque, New Mexico. A Virgin Galactic test flight Saturday ended prematurely when the spacecraft landed safely at Spaceport America in southern New Mexico after its rocket engine failed to ignite high above the Earth. The ignition sequence for the rocket motor did not complete. Vehicle and crew are in great shape, Virgin Galactic said in a brief statement on Twitter. We have several motors ready at Spaceport America. We will check the vehicle and be back to flight soon. The flight was first from Virgin Galactic's headquarters at Spaceport America, a futuristic desert outpost, before first announcing the spacecraft's safe return to land. Then the problem with the rocket. Virgin Galactic's in-flight communications were cryptic and sparse during a 15-minute period that began with an announcement that the spacecraft was gone for release from the aircraft that carried it to a released altitude. The previous Virgin Galactic News release said the release would occur at about 50,000 feet. Okay, let's see. Oracle says it will move headquarters from Silicon Valley to Texas. Looks like the rats are fleeing from California. Redwood City, California, tech giant Oracle Corporation said Friday it will move its headquarters from Silicon Valley to Austin, Texas, and let many employees choose their office location and decide whether to work from home. A business software maker said it will keep major hubs at its current home in Redwood City, California, and other locations. The move came the same week that Tesla founder Elon Musk announced that he moved to Austin. Musk had criticized California's coronavirus restrictions. So he don't like them either. Alright, let's see if we can find, here's a article on a Russian submarine. It's always interesting to see. Russian submarine test fires four missiles. Comes from Moscow. Russian nuclear submarine on Saturday successfully tested four intercontinental ballistic missiles in a show of readiness of Moscow's nuclear forces amid tension with the U.S. The Defense Ministry said that Vladimir Monomy, as close, submarine of the Pacific Fleet, launched four BULAVA missiles from the underwater position in the Sea of Okhotsk. That's spelled O-K-H-O-T-S-K. Their dummy warheads hit their designated targets on the Chinza shooting range in the Angarska region in northwestern Russia, more than 3,400 miles away. The ministry said in a statement, pretty good aim there. Vladimir Monomakh is one of the new Bora-class nuclear submarines that carry 16 Bulova missiles each and are intended to serve as the core of the naval component of the nation's nuclear forces for decades to come. Another submarine of the same type performed a similar launch of four Bulova missiles in 2018, a costly demonstration of the efficiency of the country's nuclear deterrent, mimicking the conditions of a major nuclear conflict. In a report to President Vladimir Putin, Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said that Saturday's launch wrapped up large-scale drills of Russia's strategic nuclear forces that began Wednesday. As part of those maneuvers, another Russian nuclear submarine also performed a practice launch of an intercontinental ballistic missile from the Barents Sea. A ground-based ICBM was launched from the Plesnik facility in northwestern Russia, and a Tu-160 and Tu-95 strategic bombers fired cruise missiles at test targets at an Arctic range. The series of missile losses comes less than 2 months from the new START U.S.-Russian Arms Control Treaty expires in early February. Moscow and Washington have discussed the possibilities of its extension, but so far have failed to overcome their differences. New START was signed in 2010 by U.S. President Barack Hussein Obama and Russian President Dmitry MEDVEDEV. It limited each country to no more than 1,550 deployed nuclear warheads and 700 deployed missiles and bombers, and envisioned sweeping on-site inspections to verify compliance. All right, thank you very much. Back to you there, Bob, K88JOY, in the Wednesday edition of the LibertyNet. Larry in Tennessee, and Paul, back to you.
Alrighty, Larry, thank you for jumping in there. Good to hear you. Let me see if I have any other late check-ins. This is the Wednesday night version of the Liberty Net. KHAY looking for check-ins. CQ, come now. No Passing heard. Let me read a real quick one. This is from United Voice. New York Times admits Biden is causing a migrant wave at the border. President Donald Trump has dramatically reduced the number of immigrants flooding American shores. He has implemented regulations slowed illegal and legal migration to the country, which is especially important during this pandemic-fueled economic downturn. Joe Biden wants to change all that. On December 13th, the New York Times published a piece entitled, "As Biden Prepares to Take Office, a New Rush at the Border," unquote. The newspaper admitted that former Vice President's lack of immigration policies invite people to come to the U.S. if he is sworn into office in January. The Institute of Migration and Mobility Director Alexander Allenkoff said they will likely be an increase of arrivals at the border. Latin Americans are heading north in large numbers again, forecasting an early test of President-elect Biden, who has promised a human approach to the border. What about the humans that already live here? A new flood of immigrants could hurt the economy at a critical time. It's just starting to recover from the COVID-19 pandemic, and millions of Americans are still out of work. If Biden were to win and open this country's borders, these migrants would take jobs from citizens who want to feed their family. That's exactly what President Trump has been working so hard to avoid. Yeah, they probably won't have to wear a mask or social distance, but the Americans are. And something that Larry said, I wanted to quick say, these two rich people, one of them being Elon Musk, they're moving to Texas, but they won't assimilate. They won't take on Texas values. They bring their crappy values from California. A good example is the state of Arizona. It was a very, very red state, very conservative. But all the a-holes from California moved there and did not assimilate and are trying to change the way Arizona looks. And they did, because it went blue. All right, let me see if I have any other check-ins before I jump up to Mr. Moe. CQ, CQ for the Wednesday Night Liberty Net. Nothing heard. Let me see if I can reach out to Mr. Moe. KD0RSA, Mr. Moe in the great state of Nebraska. Do you copy? Over. Mr. Bill, can you help me if you hear him?
I don't hear him, Bob.
Okay. I know it's hard for him to hear us when the band's bad, so maybe he's just spinning the bands. All righty, sir. I will come right back to you. KO4FE, KAAJOY, you have the podium.
Okay, KAAJOY, Liberty Net from KO4FE. Well, we got Prince Andrew's in the news again, being linked to another tycoon pervert. Listen to this story. This is Daily Mail out of the UK. Police swoop on pervert tycoon. Fashion mogul Peter Nygaard, who once hosted Prince Andrew at a private resort, is held over alleged sex trafficking of teenagers. A fashion tycoon who met Prince Andrew has been arrested on suspicion of raping, drugging, and sex trafficking teenagers. Peter Nygaard, 79, allegedly told girls as young as 14 he could make them models before forcing them into deviant acts. Sounds like this guy was probably buddies with Epstein. Anyway, the Duke of York visited the Canadian mogul at his private Bahamas resort in 2000, not long after Nygaard had agreed to out-of-court settlements with three employees who accused him of sexual harassment. Well, that point is interesting because it was Prince Andrew had met with had went to visit Epstein after he had been convicted of on his sex crimes. I think they plead it down to something to do with prostitution, although he was doing a lot more than that, obviously, as it's come out since then. But this Nygaard sounds like he's cut from the same cloth as Epstein. But anyway, continues, Andrew, who was about 40 at the time and had been divorced for 4 years, is not accused of anything in connection with the Nygaard case. Well, not yet. But it potentially threatens further embarrassment for the prince, already under mounting pressure over his friendship with pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Yeah, well, it gives you an idea what kind of people Andrew hangs out with. Epstein, Nygaard, I mean, it seems like he's attracted to these types. Says billionaire Nygaard was last night in custody in Winnipeg, Canada, facing extradition to New York following an FBI probe. He allegedly used his wealth to groom and entice underage girls into a globe-trotting harem. They would be paid cash and promised lucrative modeling gigs before being raped, according to the claims. The aging tycoon is said to have lured them to pamper parties where they were plied with drugs and alcohol and then violently assaulted. The case against Nygaard is being pursued by the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York. This is the same prosecutor seeking to question Andrew about his links to Epstein, whose own Caribbean island he visited. There's no mention of Andrew in the Nygaard case. Sources close to the prince have previously sought to make it clear that he was neither a friend or an associate. Oh, no, he just, went to spend time at his Bahamas resort. You know, I guess this guy just lets any strangers come to his resort. Well, anyway, when Andrew, 60, visited Nygaard's Mayan-themed Bahamas resort in 2000, he took his ex-wife, Sarah Ferguson, and daughters Beatrice and Eugenie. Nygaard arranged for a photo of himself and Andrew wandering on the sand with the prince wearing boat shoes and matching blue shorts and shirt. Last night, authorities released a 24-page indictment against Nygaard, setting out an alleged campaign of sexual abuse lasting from 1995 to this year. Some of his girls were said to have been taken to swingers clubs and forced into orgies with strangers. Like Epstein, Nygaard allegedly targeted girls from disadvantaged backgrounds. The prosecutor said yesterday that Nygaard engaged in sexual swaps with male friends and business associates who would bring Nygaard a date for sex in exchange for access to one of Nygaard's girlfriends for sex. So anyway, his lawyer's not saying anything, and then they get into, now in the final part of the Mail's forensic investigation into the allegations made against the Duke, yet another bizarre excuse has emerged. So anyway, there you go. This Prince Andrew, I mean, it seems like he only hangs around perverts. All right, this is KO4FE. Here's another story. I love how these liberal churches are just throwing money at these various black groups and whatever. They're spending millions. Churches across the U.S. commit to paying millions in racism-linked reparations in bid to reckon with the wrongs and evils of our past. This is also Daily Mail. In the wake of the social justice movement and the George Floyd protests, several U.S. religious groups have declared that they will devote millions to racism-related reparations, particularly among long-established Protestant churches that were active in the era of slavery. Many of these churches are now weighing how to make amends through financial investments and long-term programs benefiting African Americans. Among them are the Episcopal Diocese of Texas, which acknowledges that its first bishop in 1859 was a slaveholder, and a New York City Episcopal Church, which erected a plaque noting the building's creation in 1810 was made possible by wealth resulting from slavery. Well, the Episcopal, they're far left, and so are the other ones coming up here. In addition, Minnesota Council of Churches cites a host of injustices from mid-19th century atrocities against Native Americans to police killings of black people in launching a first-of-its-kind Truth and Reparations Initiative engaging its 25-member denominations. The Episcopal Church has been the most active major denomination thus far, and others, including the United Methodist Church and the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, are urging congregations to consider similar steps. Well, all three of these churches are churches in name only. They're basically all Marxist war camps. Some major denominations, including the Roman Catholic Church and the Southern Baptist Convention, have not embraced reparations as official policy. The Catholic Church has been embroiled by accusations of sex abuse and pedophile activity among its priests in recent years, with some dioceses earmarking millions in reparation funds for victims. So the Catholic Church is broke from paying out for pedophile cases. I guess they don't have enough money to give to these black groups. Although it hasn't been announced any acts of reparations yet, the Southern Baptist Convention announced in October that its Southern Baptist Theological Seminary School had created a multi-million-dollar scholarship fund for African-American students. So anyway, these dying liberal churches, I noted that the Southern Baptists have lost 1 million members just in the last year. United Methodists are almost dead. Nobody goes to their churches. The Evangelical Lutheran Church, another far-left church. It's just funny. These churches are all dying, but yet they're wanting to give millions of dollars to these black groups. You know what? I don't even care. Let them waste their money, because they're not going to get thanked for it, and it's not going to probably do any good. So anyway, back to you, Bob. K-A-8-J-O-Y, Liberty Net from KO4-FE.
Thank you, Bill. KO4-FE, K-H-O-I. Isn't it interesting how, again, you're allowed to protest and riot, but you weren't allowed to assembly, which is one of our First Amendment rights, and look what it has done to good and bad, but to the churches in general, to Christianity. Over.
Yeah, Roger. Well, I'm so surprised that these liberal churches aren't getting an exemption on these laws, but the few decent churches, or half-decent ones that are left, they got to be closed. I haven't been paying attention to the churches around here, so I don't know if they're open or not. Over.
Well, we don't have many in this town, but like where my spouse resides, there's quite a few. A lot of them have those marquees out front that they want you to go on their website and listen to the sermon virtually. But please remember to donate, because if they don't have the tithes and offerings, there's no way for them to stay in existence. Over.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, most churches have a certain amount of money set aside in funds and investments, so maybe they can keep going for at least a while without having Sunday services. That's my guess.
Well, it's been quite a few months that we've not had good Sunday services, so it's kind of interesting that they're really beating down the Christianity door. With that being said, let me jump down to Mr. Larry. N for ROQ, KAAJOY.
Okay. Bob.
Looks like an oil tanker.
Takes a blast off of Saudi Arabian coast. It made the news here in the USA Today. Tanker RHINE, suffered an explosion Monday off Saudi Arabia's port city of Jeddah, J-I-D-D-A-H. This comes from Dubois in the Associated Press, United Arab Emirates. An oil tanker off Saudi Arabia's port city of Jeddah suffered an explosion early Monday after being hit by an external source. A shipping company said suggested another vessel came under attack by the kingdom or off the kingdom amid its year-long war in Yemen. The attack on the Singapore-flagged BW Rhine, which has been contracted by the trading arm of the kingdom's massive Saudi Arabian oil company, marked the fourth assault targeting Saudi energy infrastructure in a month. It also apparently shut down Jeddah port, the most important shipping point for the kingdom, which later said a bomb-laden boat, like the remote control one used by Yemen's Houthi rebels, caused the explosion. The explosion renewed concerns about ship safety in the Red Sea, a crucial transit zone for global shipping and energy supplies that largely had avoided the chaos of regional tensions involving the U.S. and Iran last year. The BW Rhine had berthed at birth at Jeddah on Saturday, carrying over 66,000 tons of unleaded gasoline from an Iranian refinery at Yanbu for consumption in the kingdom, according to the data analysis firm Ravenna. It was there that the incident appeared to have occurred. The ship was hit from an external source while discharging, said Papa, a tanker company under the BW Group that owns and operates the ship. The strike caused an explosion and fire aboard the ship, damaging its hull. All 22 sailors on board escaped without injury, and firefighters later extinguished the blaze. Some oil may have polluted the water along the ship, though the company said it was still assessing the damage. No group claimed responsibility for the attack. Some 12 hours after the attack became public, the state-run Saudi press agency ran a statement quoting an anonymous energy ministry official blaming the explosion on a bomb-laden boat. It did not blame anyone for the attack, despite the Houthis having used drone boats in the past. Three attacks of terrorism and vandalism directed against vital installations go beyond the kingdom and its vital facilities to the security and stability of energy supplies to the world and the global economy. The United Kingdom Marine Trade Operations, an organization under Britain's Royal Navy, urged ships in the area to exercise caution and said investigations were ongoing. It later said Jeddah port had been shut down for a duration unknown without elaborating. Dryot Global, a maritime intelligence firm, also reported the blast. The U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet, which patrols the Mideast, did not respond to a request for comments. The explosion comes after a mine exploded and damaged a ship off of Saudi Arabia last month. Another mysterious attack targeted a cargo ship off the small port city of Nishtar in Yemen's Far East earlier this month. Yemen's Iranian-backed Houthi rebels have used sea mines and drone boats before in a long war against a Saudi-led coalition. However, the Houthis have not commented on last month's attack. Iran
has been blamed in the death of an ex-FBI agent. The Trump administration, for the first time on Monday, formally banned Iran, or blamed Iran, for the presumed death of retired FBI agent Robert Levinson. Publicly identified two Iranian intelligence officers believed responsible for his abduction and imposing sanctions against them. Levinson disappeared in Iran under mysterious circumstances more than a decade ago, and though U.S. diplomats and investigators long said they thought he was taken by Iranian government agents, Monday's announcement in the final weeks of the Trump administration was the most definitive assignment of blame. U.S. officials also said the Iranian regime sanctioned the plot that led to Levinson's abduction and lied for years about its involvement in the disappearance through disinformation campaign aimed at deflecting responsibility and covering up the government's role. The abduction of Mr. Levinson in Iran is an outrageous example of the Iranian regime's willingness to commit unjust acts. Treasury Secretary Stephen Mnuchin said in a statement, the United States will always prioritize the safety and security of the American people and will continue to aggressively pursue those who played a role in Mr. Levinson's detention and probable death. Iranian intelligence officers identified as Mohammed Basira and Ahmad Kazia are alleged to have been involved in the abduction. Under sanctions announced Monday, any property assets that they hold in the U.S. would be blocked. Task Force Still Hunting Looters of Chicago Stores. This comes from Associated Press, Don Badboyne. The summer night when crowds descended on downtown Chicago, shattering store windows and pouring inside the gaping holes to grab as much merchandise as they could carry away in a distant memory to many in the city. Even as the coronavirus crisis, the presidential election, and the city's gun violence epidemic pushed other news aside, detectives and prosecutors kept it one of the biggest investigations in Chicago history to find and arrest those who, from August the 9th until the early hours of August the 10th, turn block after block into the largest crime scene in the history of the nation's third largest city. 4 months later, detectives on a special task force are still looking over thousands of hours of surveillance videos and running down the more than 1,100 tips. They keep adding to the nearly 1,100 video clips they posted online in the hopes that someone might identify suspects, and they monitor online sales sites to see if someone suddenly has some goosey bags or electronics for sale. It's added up to the arrest of more than 100 people, one as recently as Wednesday, on various felony charges, including burglary, looting, theft, gun charges, selling stolen property online, and the seizure of 26 vehicles. The message to suspects is the task force isn't quitting, and you will be eventually be found and arrested. Deputy Chief Brendan Manahan said the crimes mostly took place in and around downtown, including along the famed Magnificent Mile shopping district, and began after a false rumor that police had fatally shot a teenager on the south side. It followed earlier protests and unrest stemming from the death of George Floyd in Minnesota. The daunting job of investigating the August crime started with the collection of more than 230 surveillance videos from stores that were hit, and scores more that the city's massive surveillance camera network, about 2,000 hours worth of video. Making the job harder was that many people's faces were covered with the same mask used to stop the spread of the COVID-19 virus. That left detectives searching for something else to help identify
suspects. In one case, they matched a tattoo on the arm of a man who used a hammer to smash at least 7 store windows to a tattoo from a jail booking mugshot. They also employed the same strategy on a much larger scale used in the investigation that led to charges against actor Jesse Smollett, accusing him of staging a 2019 attack on himself. Jesse detectives stitched together videos to follow two men who allegedly participated in the attack on Smollett. Looting task force detectives followed suspects as they moved from store to store. The investigation has been made more difficult because many of the suspects don't have criminal history. So police do not have mugshots of them. So for many people, it seems to have been a crime of opportunity, said Cook County State Attorney Kim Fox, whose office is prosecuting the cases. They saw what was happening and were counting on the numbers of people to be able to get away with it, she said. So we're trying to find some of these people. And we'll stop it right there and shoot it back up here to you, Bob. From Larry in Tennessee, K-A-8-J-O-Y, from N4ROQ on the Liberty Net.
Alrighty, Larry, thank you. N4ROQ, K-H-O-Y. It's interesting what the Prince of England, he got himself involved with good old Epstein, but it's like all the records and all the details of Epstein kind of disappeared. Where did all that information go, I wonder, over?
Well, it just disappeared there. Just a little money makes it disappear.
Yes, sir. That's a true statement. Well, let me see. I'm at the bottom of the list again. Let me see if I have anybody else here to check in tonight before we go to the 73 round. This is K-A-8-J-O-Y with the Wednesday Night Liberty Net. I'm floundering around here looking for my notes. Does anybody have a late check-in? Come now. Nothing heard, so I'll read one article that I think is interesting. It's from that crazy AOC. God help us. Do you realize that in 4 more years, that woman's eligible to run for president? Democratic Republican Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York says the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat from California, and Senator Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat, New York, need to vacate their positions in the government and let the younger political people hold office. She also said that the Democratic presidency legacy of stacking administrations with previous Democratic appointees and big business heads needs to stop. So she's scolding President-elect Biden. It is recently published interview with The Intercept's Jeremy Shahill. The young congresswoman said that the Democratic Party needs a serious leadership overhaul. Boy, she needs a serious enema. There's just one problem, she says. Democrats have no idea how to move forward. If you continue that vacuum, there are so many nefarious forces to play to fill the vacuum that something even worse, she warned. A lot of this is not just about these two personalities, Pelosi and Schumer, but also about the structural shifts that these two personalities have led in their time in leadership, she explained. The structural shifts of power in the both parties, frankly, but in Democratic Party leadership, to such a degree that an individual member has far less power than they did some 30, 40, and 50 years ago. She also said that Pelosi and other House members need to prepare for what comes after Pelosi retires. The left isn't really making a plan for that, she said, so I don't think it's something that we really need to think about. As for the newly minted Congresswoman, the Speaker position is not something she is ready to tackle yet. The House is extraordinarily complex, and I'm not ready, she admitted. It can't be me. I know that I can't do that job. That's because she's a crazy person. Male or female, she's crazy. Ocasio Cortez also took a swipe at the incoming Biden administration and said that the president-elect is stacking the vacancies with former Obama administration appointees. I think it's part of a larger issue that we have right now, which is the Biden administration is bringing back a lot of Obama appointees, which, depending on where you are in the party, might sound nice, I guess, she explained. But I think that a lot of people fail to remember is that we now have a Biden administration that's bringing back a lot of Obama appointees, but when Obama was making appointees, he was bringing back a lot of Clinton appointees. It's just, again, they just keep on bringing up the same old swamp, the same old pieces of dirt. The Intercept reported that dozens of people from the Goldman Sachs, McKinsey, Facebook, and Google have quietly been added to the Biden transition team in recent weeks. Ocasio Cortez explained that these very types of appointees are a huge reason why we got President Donald Trump in the first place. That doesn't make sense to me, but this little loudmouth congresswoman who was a bartender, she's not even an attorney, she was a bartender, I don't know how she keeps winning. It makes me shake my head why people vote for people like her, but they do. All righty, we're at the 73 round, kind of a light night, but that's okay, we're here still. So, Mr. William, the podium is yours, KO4FE, KAHJOY.
Okay, KAHJOY, Liberty Net, KO4FE. Yeah, not too many check-ins tonight, but of course the band wasn't very good. But we made it through. Okay, here's another one off the Daily Mail. Portland police chief tells protesters to put down their weapons as armed activists set up an autonomous zone protected by booby traps to protest eviction of black family as violent crime spikes in the neighborhood. Armed protesters have set up a new autonomous zone in Portland to protest the eviction of a black family. Demonstrators have barricaded themselves in the property, dubbed the Red House on the Mississippi, and have set up booby traps, laid down homemade spike strips to puncture the tires of vehicles, and are stockpiling weapons as they prepare to defend the home. Portland Police Chief Chuck Lovell issued a plea to demonstrators Wednesday to put down your weapons and warned officers will use force if necessary to clear the occupation. The same day, people were seen setting up more barricades. Obviously, they couldn't give a damn less what this police chief says because they figure he's just a bunch of hot air. Set up barricades, including spike strips made from boards and nails, and armed guards who were stationed at intersections keeping watch, reported Oregon Live, in efforts to prevent the removal of the Kenny family. By Wednesday night, blockade stretched at least 2.5 blocks from North Skidmore to Blandina Streets along North Mississippi and Albina Avenues as occupiers cordoned off parts of the road, pitched tents, and huddled around a small fire as night fell. The Kenny family have owned the Red House since the 1950s but took out a new mortgage to pay defense lawyers for their son, William III, who was sent to prison for a car incident in 2022, according to the Red House on the Mississippi group. With the family owing $97,000, the house went into foreclosure and was sold to a developer at a 2018 auction, and the family was evicted at gunpoint 3 months ago, the group said. Well, I don't know. That's what happens. You take out a mortgage and you can't make the payments. You got to go. And they actually lived there for 2 years after the house was sold. I don't know what they're complaining about. A group of activists have camped at the home ever since to express their outrage against gentrification and the eviction of the black and indigenous family. Yeah, gentrification. if a white person buys a house that a black person owned, that's gentrification, and that's bad. But if a black person buys a house from a white person, then that's considered integration, and that's, of course, good. The outrage came to a head Tuesday when the property owners complained people were trespassing, and officers showed up and made several arrests. Let's scroll down. Chief Lovell said in a video message Wednesday that the police were aware of a stockpile of weapons in the zone. Portland police share the community's concern about the barricades, occupation, and criminal activity in North Mississippi. Those present at the barricades should leave it behind, put down your weapons, and allow the neighborhood to return to peace and order. We are aware of a stockpile of weapons and the presence of firearms. We are aware of the threats to the community, police, media. We've seen the attacks. He warned that police will enforce the law and use force if necessary to restore order in the neighborhood. Well, the police have since backed down. They're not going to do anything. So this kind of stuff's just going to keep happening. They go in there, they do all this illegal stuff, the cops make up a bunch of threats, and then they end up backing down, so that's even worse than if they'd have ignored it. So now they've got these barricades built up. They keep adding more stuff to their barricades. They're even putting up chain link fences in the barricade, so, and the people there are standing there looking like they're wondering what the hell's going on. So anyway, this is what you got going on in Portland. This is what the liberals always create, this type of chaos. These useless leftists who don't have anything better to do, just going around causing trouble, destroying things, creating disturbances, annoying everyone, all over a group of people that couldn't pay their mortgage. So I don't know what to say. I'm just glad it's happening in Portland. So anyway, that's it for me tonight. So anyway, I'll pass it back, 73s, to the people that checked in tonight. Thanks for running the net tonight, Bob. So anyway, back to you, KAHJOY. Liberty Nets and KO4FE.
KO4FE, KHOI. So what do you think? We have all these dissension, and of course now, in the event the President-elect Biden does end up in that office, which I still got my fingers crossed, and I'm still hoping and praying he doesn't, how much unrest do you think that we'll have even with him in that office? Over.
Oh, I think it's just going to continue because they've been going on for a year now. Nothing's really happening. I mean, they arrest a few people, the most egregious offenders. I mean, maybe someone that actually murders somebody, or, you know, they arrest them for throwing firebombs and destroying property, but then they just turn around and let them go. So I don't see that they're paying much of a cost, so I think they're going to keep at it, Bob.
Really sad. And if people start flooding our borders, I have a feeling that the conservative right wing might take up arms against them, because if the government doesn't stop all this intrusion into America, people might stop it themselves. I don't know what's going to happen. All righty, Mr. Larry, it's up to you. You are at the bottom of the list. That doesn't mean you're last, but you get to close it. What do you have to say for your final thoughts? N4 ROQ, KAHJOY.
Okay, thanks for running the net. Thanks for all the people who checked in. For me also, from me and the band, this didn't seem too bad to me. It sounds pretty good on this end. You're coming in good down here, Bill and Bob, and I could hear her buddy out in the back there for a while, but I was in the other room and could hear him. I hope he's okay there. Mo, our friend
about Nebraska.
Okay, let's see. I'm with Bill. I think they'll continue. These liberal Democrats are not putting the police out there or any kind of federal troops. They're just wanting it to go on. It looks like to me, they're not trying to stop it. Trump said I could stop it in 30 minutes, but they don't want to call to have any other troops put in there to stop it. The Democrats like looting, and they like their town to be burned down, and they like it. The governor and the liberals, they like it. So they can get more money and rebuild and break the country more. So anyway, go from there. Let's see, U.S. agency networks are scoured after hack. Foreign nation almost surely responsible, the experts say. This comes from the Associated Press. From Washington, U.S. government agencies and private companies rushed Monday to secure their computer networks following the disclosure of a sophisticated and long-running cyber espionage intrusion that experts say almost certainly was carried out by a foreign state. It was not yet clear who was responsible for the intrusion, though it reportedly conducted by Russia, and the extent of the damage is not yet known. The potential threat was significant enough that the Department of Homeland Security's Cyber Security Unit directed all federal agencies to remove compromised network management software, and thousands of companies were expected to do the same. What was striking about the operation was its potential scope, as well as the manner in which the perpetrators managed to pierce cyber defenses and gain access to email and internet files at the Treasury and Commerce Department and potential elsewhere. The campaign came to light when a prominent cyber security firm, FireEye, learned it had been breached. FireEye would not say whom it suspected, though many experts quickly suspected Russia, given the level of skill involved. Foreign governments and major corporations were also compromised. U.S. authorities acknowledged that federal agencies were part of the breach on Sunday, providing few details. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, known as CISA, said in an unusual directive that the widely used network software SolarWinds had been compromised and should be removed from any system using them. SolarWinds is used by hundreds of thousands of organizations around the world, including most Fortune 500 companies and multiple U.S. federal agencies. The perpetrators were able to embed malware in a security update issued by the company based in Austin, Texas. Once inside, they could impersonate system administrators and have total access to the infected networks, experts say. This can turn into one of the most impactful espionage campaigns on record, said Dmitry Alperovich, former chief technical officer of cybersecurity firm CrowdStrike. The Washington Post cited unnamed sources said the attack was carried out by Russian government hackers that go by the nickname APT-29 or Cozy Bear and are part of the nation's Foreign Intelligence Service. That nation's Foreign Intelligence Service. U.S. officials have declined to say who they believe is responsible. National Security Council spokesman John Oatyot said Monday only that the Trump administration was working with the CISA, the U.S. intelligence agencies, the FBI, and government departments that were affected to coordinate a response to whoever it was behind it. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said Monday that Russia had nothing to do with the hack. So I'm pretty sophisticated hack, if you ask me. Okay, let's see. Japan has got a
Space Agency now, and they've confirmed that a capsule holds asteroid soil. Comes from Tokyo. Japan Space Agency said Monday that it confirmed the presence of black soil samples in a capsule that spacecraft Hayabusa 2 brought back from a distant asteroid last week. The pan-shaped capsule, 15 inches in diameter, was dropped by Hayabusa 2 from space onto a spot in a sparsely populated Australian desert. December the 6th, the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency said its scientists opened the capsule and found an unspecified amount of sandy black particles. JAXA said it will continue to initial or with an initial examination. All right, let's see. Sudan is scratched from the U.S. terror list. U.S. Embassy in Khartoum said Monday that President Donald Trump's administration removed Sudan from the U.S. list of state sponsors of terrorism, a move that would help the African country get international loans to revive its battered economy and end its pariah status. According to the Facebook post by Embassy, Sudan's removal was effective Monday. A notification to the effect signed by U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo would be published in the Federal Registry. It said, adding that the 45-day congressional notification period had lapsed. The achievement comes with numerous opportunities for the Sudan's development. And the article goes on. Pompeo said in a statement that the removal came after Sudan's traditional government met the statutory and policy criteria and chartered a bold new course away from the legacy of foreign autocratic President Omar al-Bashir. Delisting Sudan represents a fundamental change in our bilateral relationship toward greater collaboration, he said. All right. Trump raises China concerns as reason to veto the defense bill. President Donald Trump tweeted Sunday that he intends to veto a wide-ranging defense policy bill, raising new but unspecified concerns about China as a reason to reject the traditionally bipartisan measure. The biggest winner of our new defense bill is China. I will veto, Trump said. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, and other GOP backers have said the bill will help deter Chinese aggression. Both chambers approved the measure by more than a two-thirds majority needed to override a veto. Looks like Trump may lose that veto. Okay, let's see. One other article here is FedEx and UPS will split the distribution of vaccines. UPS will focus on delivering COVID-19 vaccine doses to the eastern half of the United States. A company spokesman confirmed leaving the western half of the country for FedEx and a 50-50 split between the two delivery jobs. COVID-19 vaccine distribution will be balanced among major cargo carriers, and we are one of the two primary vaccine shippers in the U.S., FedEx said in a statement regarding the split distribution. We have worked closely with our healthcare customers on a highly orchestrated and precise distribution plan, but are not releasing details. FedEx and UPS have not released the specific states each is responsible for in the distribution effort, but Wes Wheeler, president of the Global Healthcare at UPS, said Thursday, we know exactly what states we have, and they know what states they have. U.S. Food and Drug Administration approval of Pfizer and BioNTech's vaccine is coming in just a few days. This is Sunday's paper, but with that distribution beginning shortly after, we could see people getting vaccinated Monday, Tuesday, or next week. If granted FDA authorization, which I believe it is granted, vaccine will be shipped from Kalamazoo, Michigan
manufacturing site at its Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin distribution center. The administration sites using ground and air transportation from FedEx and UPS. Federal Express primary shipping hub is in Memphis, while UPS Global Air Shipping Hub is in Louisville. UPS is shipping COVID-19 vaccine kits with kits moving in and out of its Louisville Worldport daily, the Louisville Courier Journal reported. Richard Smith, FedEx Express Regional President of the Americas, said Thursday that the company has reserve capacity for COVID-19 vaccines and is working with government officials to give flights carrying the vaccine top priority. So we'll see what happens there. And we'll shoot back up here to you, Bob. Thanks for running that again. And hope you have a good week, and we'll see you again on Saturday. From Larry in Tennessee, and for Hokie.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you for being with us and bringing those topics to the table in 4ROQ. I'm sorry the band's kind of poor, but that I really can't control that, that's for sure. So thank you for you guys being here. Appreciate it. With that being said, I'm going to close the window on this night's Liberty Net. I want to wish Mrs. Calabash a good night wherever she is, as well as a safe night to all the ships at sea, including the United States Navy, the sailors and soldiers that are listening tonight. And 73s to some other netters, Victor, W1WCR, Marty, N2IRJ, and Miss Laura, N2JTTF, as they are absent. It is my prayer for God to bless this great country called America, and we definitely need prayers. This is KAHJOY for ID and 73s.
Okay, see you later, Bob.